You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here today to discuss our July 2025 book club pick, Pingsu for Two by Sujin Witherspoon. This book was a patron's choice book club pick selected for us by our Patreon supporters. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, you can do so by heading on over to patreon.com/booksandboba and becoming an official member. Our Patreon supporters gain access to our members-only Discord server where we discuss all of our book club picks in real time. And for those of you supporting us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the aforementioned ability to help us pick a patron's choice book club pick once per quarter. As always, thank you to all of our patrons for their support in helping us keep doing what we're doing here at Books and Boba. And just a reminder, our next patron's choice will be October for our annual spooky read, so stay tuned for that. Before we get started, just a quick standard spoiler warning. In our book club discussion episodes, we do discuss our book club pick in its entirety, which, as always, does include character and plot spoilers. So if you have not finished the book and care about being spoiled for this rom-com, this is your cue to hit pause on the podcast, finish the book, and come back and listen to our discussion.
I'm looking at the book jacket description because I did not read the summary before I started reading this book, and now I'm like, oh, I can see why I was like surprised, because a lot of things happen, but the book jacket kind of puts all the spoilers out there. It's one of those trailers that tell you exactly what the movie is, and it's like, maybe if you want to enjoy this book, don't read the summary, just like, dive right in
or read it. I feel like this is the type of book where the people who love it know exactly what they're coming in for, and you know, is trading on those tropes. And we'll get into that, because this somehow, this book, I'm bursting at the seams just to talk about this with you, Reba, because man, what?
Yeah, it got to experience. A point where like Marvin was like, you can like send me your live reactions, and I'm like, what happens in this book that you want to hear real-time thoughts? And
when
I did my due diligence, I did write down my real-time thoughts for like a good chunk of this book. And
I say our Discord has never been more active, man, this book really brought it out of our book club members. But let's get into it then. Let's jump right in. Rira, why don't you start us off, as always, with the book jacket description of Pingsu for Two by Sujin Witherspoon.
All right. Meet River Langston Lee. In the past 24 hours, he's dumped his girlfriend, walked out of his SATs, and quit his job at his parents' cafe in spectacularly disastrous fashion, even for him. Somehow he manages to talk his way into a gig at a failing Korean cafe, Pingsu for Two, which is his lucky break until he meets short, grumpy, and goth Sarang Cho. She's his new no-BS co-worker who's as determined to make River's life hell as she is to save her family's cafe. After River accidentally uploads a video of his chaotic co-workers to his popular fandom account, they strike viral fame. The kicker? Their new fans ship River and Sarang big time. In order to keep the internet's attention and the cafe's new paying customers, River and Sarang must pretend that the tension between them is definitely of the romantic variety, not the considering the best way to kill you and hide your body variety. But when Pingsu for Two's newfound success catches the attention of River's ex and his parents' cafe around the corner, he faces a choice: keep letting others control his life or stand up for the place that's become home and a green-haired girl who's not as heartless as he originally thought.
Yeah, I can see. Like, I also did not read the entire book jacket description until you read it out loud to me right now. And it does give away a lot of the plot.
Yeah, it spoils a lot of the twists and plot points. Like, I think that's why, like, when all the disastrous stuff and like really bad decisions came in the book, I was like, oh, no. But if I had read the summary before I read the book, I wouldn't have been surprised at all.
I mean, I feel like even though the summary gives you a glimpse into the trash disaster that is our main character, River Langston Lee, I don't think it accurately depicts the amount of disaster, the amount of chaos that those first few chapters bring. Like, this guy does not make the best first impression. It took me a while. I don't even know if I ever came around on him, to be honest.
I think Sujin did a really good job writing River's character, because he really seemed like a person that exists in real life. And it's really hard to write a character who makes this many mistakes and is a walking disaster and just like is struggling so much and dealing with the consequences of his type B actions. It's really hard to like write that type of character. And I like fully believed it. So props to Sujin. But yeah, opening chapter. The first note that I have is, who the fuck breaks up with their long-term partner the day before their SATs? And this is before he walked out of his SATs. And then I was like, what the hell? Why'd he walk out of his SATs?
Yeah, he walks out of the SATs because he somehow forgot that he was going to see the girl he just dumped at the SATs because they're taking it together. Like, just like the first of...
I mean, why wouldn't they take it together? Like, it's just like, yeah, why?
Just like the first of many, many bad, terrible decisions that this guy makes. And then he goes, he finds refuge in his parents, in the new branch of his parents' cafe that he is managing. And so I feel like we need to actually start off this conversation with like a bunch of, I don't know if caveat's the right word, but like, there's a lot of things in this book that I think can only exist in the realm of rom-coms, right? And this is something that my co-hosts at Good Pop always make fun of me about. It's like, I take things really seriously and I take world building really seriously. Like, you know, I'm a fantasy reader. I love world building, love, you know, kind of seeing how the author builds the logic behind the world. And so I think that is diametric opposed to the way that rom-coms are set up, because a lot of times the world building in a rom-com, even though they're set in the real world, it's a lot of hand waving, right? There's a lot of like, this is just how it happens.
Yeah, but like, okay, even as like a rom-com lover, and you know, as someone who watches anime and you know watches K-dramas, and there's a lot of suspension of belief, like even then, I was like, should high schoolers be managers at like a big cafe chain? Like, I mean, they're at school most of the time. So, like, who's running the cafe from, like, 8 to 3? And
yeah, they portray, like, River's parents or River's dad as, like, this very, like, stressed out workaholic. Like, he really cares about his business. And so why are you giving the keys to your essentially flagship franchise, right? The franchise that's going to make or break, according to the story, make or break the investor's confidence in your store to your 17-year-old son and his girlfriend, who are full-time high school students. Like, if I was an investor, I would say that is a questionable business decision, my guy.
Also, it's a questionable business decision to hire your son's girlfriend as co-manager, because I don't know, just like having romantic relationships at work, it doesn't always work, right?
Well, right. And here's where like the rom-com logic comes in, right? Because we are told that Cece, his ex, is like a business genius, right? She got into UPenn. She's going to Wharton, you know, Ivy League business school. And we're told that she's a business genius. We're not given reasons why. You know, her characterization is like she's very cutthroat. And I feel like this the story wants us, like, it needs us to know and believe that she's a business genius without her ever doing any business geniusy things. And again, that's part of the hand waving of like the rom-com setup. It's like when a rom-com tells you this main character is a really good journalist, right? Even though you never see her do any journalism.
Yeah. I mean, like it she keeps talking about how this would be great for her college resume and college applications. And I'm like, I mean, if you're already taking your SATs right now, like you should have already submitted most of your college apps at this point. So I was a little bit confused by that. And also just how would this help with your college application? Just being like, I am a co-manager at this cafe franchise and look at how much profit we made. I feel like that's not impressive for a business school.
That's true. Like, okay, so, okay, granted, I haven't taken an SAT in like, at this point, over 20 years. But yeah, college. So this takes place in the fall of their senior year, right? Which means it's when college applications are due, which also means they probably should have taken their SATs in the spring of their junior year or during the summer, right? So again, like it's there because it needs to serve a point. We need a pivotal high school moment for like all the shit to go down in the first chapter, right? So it serves a point in the rom-com setup or conceptualization of this world. So again, it's like, if
again,
you think
like,
too
it's
hard
like you
about
can't
it,
think about
yeah.
it too much.
Our book club member, Nina, said it best. It's like, you know, it's a fun story if you don't squint too hard, but I like to squint a lot when I read. I really love that she used the word squint because I definitely did a lot of squinting myself while reading this book. And it definitely describes the way that I look at like, when I watch media and like the world building doesn't make sense. Yeah, I squint. I'm like, huh.
Yeah, which is why, like, I was telling Marvin this before we started recording. Like, I feel like this book, this story would have worked better as a webtoon or like a graphic novel because I feel like, I don't know, like the suspension of belief is a lot, you know, lower. So it's like you believe in things a little bit more when it's like in like that format. And you know, like this kind of reminded me of Scott Pilgrim in terms of like Disaster Boy and girl with dyed hair who is like, you know, who
the
is
manic
like
pixie
a tough
dream girl,
nut
right?
to
but
crack.
Not really. She's not
She's
exactly
not a
manic
pixie dream
girl, but kind of like that. She plays that role as like the foil to his like worldview. Scott Pilgrim at least was set in college, like they were college kids. And I think we discussed this in the Discord as well. I feel like a lot of the fundamental problems I have with like the setting world building could be solved by aging these kids up like at least 5 years, right? They need to be either in college or right out of college where, you know, especially in this economy, like working a barista job is technically something they might be doing. I feel like, and I wonder if this is kind of a commentary on, because we did discuss like Sujin Witherspoon, the author, wrote this book while a college student. And like we mentioned, Rira and I have not been in college in years, in a long time, right? It's like a whole generation has passed since we were in college. Maybe two since I've been in college, right? And
yeah, like the SATs have changed. I like found that out like semi-recently.
They changed and they changed back. Like they're back to 1600 again, I think.
I mean, you say that, but like for me, it was like I went to school when SAT was 2400.
Okay, and so we had it changed between test. Me and you, and then it changed back. Right?
And they got rid of the writing part, and I'm like, what did they put in?
See, for us, the writing section was part of the SAT 2. Our SAT 1s was just verbal and math. And then SAT 2s was where the writing section came in. And that was an optional, but not really optional, test for us to take. But yeah, and you know, I recently read an article, I think it was an Atlantic article, about how like there are different childhoods now. And if you're a child with like a type A parent, you're being driven to like activity to activity to build up your skills and your resume for future college. And I wonder if that type of pressure is what Sujin is like kind of playing off of here, because I feel like Cece's motivation, like, so Nina on our Discord also mentioned, like, she mentioned a lot of things that like was kind of took her out of the story. And one was Cece's motivation for being a selfish desire to further her own future, such as she's willing to ruin life to achieve her goals. And chief of that being like, she needs to be the manager of a successful coffee franchise in order for her to like succeed at Wharton. Right. That is,
which I mean, I really don't see that as, because again, like once she goes to business school, who is going to be the manager of this like franchise that she is so desperately wanting to helm? And also like you don't think that you like won't have better things to do after you graduate from a prestigious business school? Like, most people go to intern at like big firms or big banks or, you know, like that's what they're doing to, you know, get success, not like stick with their high school job of running a coffee shop franchise. I mean, that's still impressive. I'm just saying that it doesn't really if she's that ambitious and that cutthroat, I just don't think it's enough, you know, of a motivation.
Yeah. And it'd be different if it was like the family business, right? Here's how I help my family business like succeed. But it's like, here is how, I don't know. It's just something about that. Like, I understand the motivation, right? She is someone who is driven to get what she wants at all costs, which, you know, is kind of a corporate capitalist mentality to have, right? And she's definitely like willing to play dirty to get what she wants. But the fact that like this is the linchpin of her college application, it does make you squint a little bit. Is the fact that like all the characters, all these teenage characters in this story have just so much responsibility.
Like, yeah, like like we were talking about this before the recording, and I'm like, is high school culture different now? Like, I understand that, you know, it's encouraged for high schoolers to get internships and, you know, job opportunities before they go to college. But I'm like, this is way too much. Like, what do you mean that you're showing up at a cafe at like 4 a.m. to prepare shop, and then you go to school like at 8 and do your whole like school life, and then you go back to your work? Like, I understand that that is like a lot of people's like realities, but it was just really hard for me to believe that like every single high schooler was going through this, because there was not a single, other than Hanul, who is Sarang's older sister. Like, everyone was 17, everyone was 18, and I'm like, I don't know, like where are the grad students who are scraping by? Like, I thought Vanna would be one of them, but like she's also like a teenager, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and so everything started making sense when, another of our book club members, Cup of Gin, asked us, like, when you read this book, do you imagine them to be live action or animated? And for me, I was like, well, in my head, they're animated, partly because the book cover of the book is animated, but also I've been watching a lot of anime recently, so it's like just in my head. And this type of setup makes sense. Again, going with your webtoon example too, if you view this as like a slice of life anime, right, where it's like a world where there's really no parents, it's just kids, like kind of, you know, in a lot of slice of life anime, you see like poor kids who are like also run their parents' like coffee house or cafe or diner or business, right? There's a lot of those types of setups, and I feel like this is, I don't know if this is playing on that, but this definitely, it's more believable if I view it as like a cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys read webtoons, like the vibe that like I would think this type of story would be going for is let's play. Yeah, because there's a lot of like kooky things that happen, and I'm like, yeah, it's more believable when it's like in cartoon form, in illustrated form.
And I feel like if it is live action, right, it is the type of live action show where all the teens are played by like 30-year-olds.
Yeah, it's a CW show.
Yeah,
like everybody is like 25.
High melodrama. And it was surprising to me to learn how young the author actually is, because a lot of her references are like references that I recognize, right? Like, unless Boys Over Flowers is still like a super popular show with like the teens these days, like, I like, some of the references are just like, this sounds, she feels like an old soul to me, right?
Yeah. I don't know how long it took for this book to be written and like published, because like we said, Soojin was 19 when she was working on this. I'm like, how old are you now? I'm like, so speaking of Boys Over Flowers, I wrote a note here saying, River saying he loves Boys Over Flowers. I don't.
Now, is that a blanket statement on all versions of Boys Over Flowers, or just specifically the Korean version?
You know, I don't like, I especially do not like the Korean version because, you know, personal ties to it. Also, I read the manga when it was ongoing, okay? And I've read better mangas, okay? Like, I've read better shoujos. It's, like, I feel like there have been so many good K-dramas in the last decade that Boys Over Flowers is, like, not the flagship drama that I would recommend to, like, my non-K-drama friends. You know, like, Goblin is right there. Sky Castle's there. My Love from Another Star. Like, so many that came out in, like, the 2010s that are, like, super popular now.
Yeah. And I only know this because I watched along with the Korean Drama Podcast when they did their first season. But, like, it's seminal and it's, like, important, but it's also super dated, right? And, like, I feel like the only way you would still love that show to this day is if you were obsessed with it when you were a teen. It's like a lot of my friends who are still really excited about, like, they're excited about F4 reuniting, like the original Meteor Garden, the Taiwanese version. Like, those four guys became a pop band and they're reuniting for a tour. And, like, it's all my high school friends going crazy over because, like, that was their F4. And I watched Meteor Garden. That was not a good show. The acting is terrible.
It was not. Yeah, it was not good. Okay.
The one thing that has going for it, though, is it does age the kids up. They are college students in Meteor Garden, which I think works better in general.
Yeah, and then, like, there's some, like, I also have a note here saying, Sarang doesn't know what shipping is? You're a high schooler. You should know what that is. So again, like with the old soul thing, I'm like, maybe there's some personal projection into this character.
I mean, she doesn't have time for internet bullshit. Like, she doesn't know what fandom is.
But, like, it's beyond internet stuff, you know? Like
that's
for
true.
Example, real people are saying I ship real people together. So it's definitely happening enough that it's, like, in the lexicon of the non-nerds. So,
and it does seem like she is into, like, Korean pop culture. And, like, I don't think you can be a K-drama watcher without understanding the, you know, the mechanics of shipping, right?
Yeah. We're being nitpicky with, like, small details. But we should go back to the main story of how River ended up at Pingzu 42. Because, yeah, like, what a day he had. He walks out of his SAT. He goes to his work at his parents' new Cafe Gong location. And you have Sarang and Vanna, like, come in. You don't know who they are at first.
This is the meet cute, like, right? This is the...
Yeah, they're, like, scoping up their competition, and they're like, oh, this cafe has, like, no character. Like, it's, like, elevator music and, like, super industrial, like, decor. And there's some banter, and then Sarang spills, pours coffee all over River, and the River pours coffee beans all down her shirt. And I'm like, this escalated very fast. And I wrote, what a shitty manager, being insulting and escalating the conflict. Fire him now.
I mean, he is technically at that point burnt out and over. Like, he is definitely, as the kids say, crashing out this entire chapter.
I mean, it is a valid crash out, but I'm just saying, like, pouring coffee beans over, like, into her shirt. I'm just like, no, just no.
So what did you think of this as, like, their, you know, enemies to lovers meet cute, right? Like, they have to start with, like, an inciting incident where they hate each other. Did this work for you?
No, it didn't. Like, I feel like it should have been more grievous, you know? Because, like, the jump from, like, passive aggressiveness to pouring coffee over someone's head, I'm like, no, like, I feel like it had to be a stronger level of insult for that to happen, and it didn't.
I feel like at that point I was still reading, this still feels playful and not, like, you know, like, it's not as I guess, severe as I like my enemies to lovers to start off. It needs to start off with, like, some sort of misunderstanding or just, like, utter, like, this, like, resentment you can feel, right?
Like, it has to be, like, really personal when they were saying, like, oh, this is our competition, and then it's like, what the hell? They stole our recipe for, like, our special drinks? Like, holy, like, how dare they do that? Blah, blah. Yeah, it would have, yeah. It should have been something more severe.
I feel like it would have worked better if he had known that they were from Bingsu for two, right? And then,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, Kath, I did like the commentary that, like, you know, so Cafe Gong is River's parents' coffee shop that they started as a family business. We learn later that River really loved Cafe Gong because it had that family feel, it had like that small business feel. And then his dad is very hell-bent on making it into a national franchise. And so that's where this location comes in. And it does remind me of like a lot of like small, like I imagine Cafe Gong is probably like, it's a Korean cafe, right? It's like one of those.
Yeah. Like immediately the thought that came up was Cafe Bene,
yeah.
Paris Baguette, Two Le Jours, like, you know, those big chains that are like mediocre. They may have started off as like really good coffee, really good pastries, but it's like as they expanded, it just became more generic.
Yeah. And like that, the family business losing its soul is like a valid kind of reason why he's crashing out as well on like this location, because like he is not into what his family business is becoming. And I think that's what drew him to Bingsu for two, right? When he ends up there, I forget why he ended up there. Just randomly, right? He's like,
okay.
He went to visit his friend Kai, right? Or
yeah. So like, one, he comes back from, you know, rage quitting his job, and then his parents are like, "We found out that you walked out during your SATs. Like, what are you gonna do about your future?" And they're like, "Well, I guess you'll have to like work full time at the cafe, and you know, be, you know, diligent with that." And you know, since his ex-girlfriend that he dumped the day before the SATs is his co-manager, he's like, I don't want to spend all of my time there with her. So he's like, actually, I'm gonna do SAT tutoring, and it's gonna be intensive, so I don't have time. But after that, he was like, fuck, what am I gonna do like with all that time? And then that's when Kai, his friend, is like, why don't you just work at the place that I work at? Like they're looking to hire,
right.
Which turns out to be a lie also. But
and then so squinting moment here, which is like, what kind of parent does not confirm the SAT tutoring school that they're probably paying for that their child is going to?
Well, I guess they're thinking that it's free because schools do like after school, like free programs, or at least my school did in order to combat the, you know, trying to like level the playing field. But it was definitely not leveling the playing field as someone who went to SAT school since like seventh grade. Like there was absolutely no way people who were studying last minute was ever going to catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so he ends up going to Bingsu for two, realizes that this is the... And so we get this backstory, right, where he specifically picked this location, this area of Seattle for the new Cafe Gong franchise, because the only competition is this small mom-and-pop Korean coffee shop that probably won't survive once the big boy is there. And then he realized that this place that he wants to get a job is that same place that he's trying to put out of business, which adds to his guilt. Which I guess valid.
Yeah, like it is such a shitty thing to do, because River grew up like in a family chain, in like a mom and pop coffee shop business, and he's doing that to another Korean family. Like that, like that's a new low. And I don't know, like I still am kind of skeptical that like his parents would be like, okay, you pick this location and we're going to go with it. Because I feel like the board and like other business executives have to make that decision. And it's like, again, another hurdle of like disbelief.
I feel like part of it is we're not meant to think too much about it. But if you want to dig into the nitty gritty, it doesn't seem like they're corporatized yet. So it seems like Dad is still the chief executive, so he has the ability to make these decisions. They do mention investors that are looking at the performance of this new store to determine whether or not they'll give him more money to open more franchises. So there are people that are scrutinizing his decision, which I feel like, again, the decision to make your son a high school student a 17-year high school student, the manager of your new location, to me, would scream, this is not a sound business. This is not a business.
As someone who has an MBA, like it is not. Yeah, you do not see it as a sound decision.
Yeah.
So he goes in to interview. Kai had like bailed on him, being like, sorry, I'm doing stuff right now. But I told him that you're interviewing. He did not. And I'm like, wow, a type B person with an even more type B friend. This sounds like my utter nightmare in terms of friend group. And Hanu, Sarang's older sister, she like interviews him. She's just like, why do you want to work here? We don't make enough money to hire another person. I do not know who told you that we are hiring, but we are not. And he kind of just word vomits his life story and being like, I really, really need this job. And she's just like, go apply to one of the many coffee shops in Seattle if you're like that good and that desperate for a job.
I don't know if I ever came around on River's character towards the end. Like, it was mm-hmm. fun reading his shenanigans. Like, this book has a ton of great shenanigans and he brings chaos wherever he goes, but as a character, I don't know if I ever came around to like, I guess I sympathize with him. I empathize with him, but I still don't think I like him.
I mean, I don't think you're supposed to like him. At the very least, like the ending should make you tolerate him and cheer for him to become a more mature adult. You know, it's like finally. Like, you have your shit together, or at least you have your spoon for emotional decision making has grown. So,
right. Because like, as a coming of age protagonist, I guess it makes sense. Like, this is a story about him coming to like overcoming his type B personality and kind of taking charge of his, like, not taking charge of his life, but taking responsibility for his actions. Right. Because he does make a ton of mistakes. And then I feel like the enemies to lover romance side of it is kind of secondary to that storyline. Right?
Yeah, it really is secondary, which, you know, like, I do prefer more like personal coming of age growth stories, like that plot line more than like enemies to lovers. Yeah. So the cafe, Pingsu for Two, I have some notes. I wrote, no way a Korean cafe is selling kimchi jeon or kimchi pancake and tteokbokki on top of bingsu and all of their specialty drinks that probably take a lot of time to make. Tteokbokki, like spicy rice cakes, like they go bad very quickly. Like you need to buy fresh rice cakes every day. And like when you're cooking it, as soon as it cools down, like the sauce like coagulates. So you have to keep it warm the entire time. And I feel like if you're going to keep it warm the entire time, that's really like counterintuitive to have a pingsu business because mm-hmm. that's shaved ice. So I was just like, that's like they don't have the kitchen capacity to do that. And then also maybe it's because I live in LA and I pay like $7 for boba, but the menu is so cheap, $3.75 for a latte. I'm like, LA could never. That's what I wrote.
I feel like, yeah.
Seattle could never either. Like, again,
like, especially,
coffee
especially
capital
like
of America.
Especially a specialty drink, right? These days, like, a Starbucks coffee, just like brewed coffee, is like $3.75 for like a medium. Like anything latte or like anything that requires milk or any other like extra steps, you're looking at $5, $6 at least.
Yeah. And if it's a specialty drink, it is like at least $6, yeah. Usually $7.
Again, we don't know when this book was written. We don't know when's the last, like, and it's, again, it's a lot of things that we have to squint at, right? We have to like, huh, and kind of admit that. Okay, this is the way that this world works. We are now living in an alternate rom-com reality where we have to take the world it portrays at face value and not think too hard about it. We have to believe that there is a coffee house called Bingsu for Two that also serves tteokbokki and Korean specialties. And I gotta be honest, if I was walking the street and I saw a shop called Bingsu for Two, I would have not known it was a coffee place.
As a connoisseur of Bingsu and also like Korean cafes, never have I seen these entrees on their menus. The closest I can get to is in Arcadia, there's a cafe called Spiceology, and it's cash only, and it's Taiwanese. So you have like popcorn chicken, Taiwanese sausage, and like minced pork meat with rice, along with like all of their boba choices, and they have shaved ice, and that is rare.
Yeah, but like, I mean, Taiwanese shaved ice is also a lot simpler than like Korean bingsu. Like, if we're not looking at the ice
I remember you
type,
asking what the difference was. And as someone who has like eaten both like pretty frequently, when I say I am a bingsu connoisseur, I am not joking. I have tried pretty much bingsu in every single shop in like Koreatown and also like in my surrounding area. I can eat an entire bowl by myself. And when I say an entire bowl, I don't mean like the single serving size,
like the giant like bowl.
Like there's a bingsu shop here also in K-Town called Okobing, and their specialty is like this honeydew bingsu. So they get like a melon, they cut it in half, they scoop it out, put the shaved ice, and then all the scooped out honeydew melon, they like put it into balls and they put it on top of the shaved ice. I've eaten that entire thing by myself. Like,
I think the main difference is bingsu is like a lot of things that Korean people have like taken as their own. It's gone through like the extra filter, right? It's like,
I mean, like, bingsu is also, like, very traditional. Like, I remember growing up, we had, like, a manual machine for bingsu. And, it's mostly ice that is, like, very, very finely grained, you know? Like, the quality that you want is, like, it's so fluffy that it feels like snow. It doesn't have, like, the ice crystals that you kind of get at like Taiwanese places. Their ice is like a little bit more crunchy. Yeah. And that's a vibe.
I think,
you know,
Taiwanese,
I like crunchy ice too.
Yeah, I think Taiwanese shaved ice is more crushed than shaved.
Yeah.
Right. Like the shaved ice that I remember from my childhood is very simple. Just like red bean, IU jelly, and then shaved ice and some like simple syrup on top. Maybe condensed milk if you want it to be a little bit sweeter. It's not until I think recently, like the last 20, 30 years, where you start seeing like the ones that are like, topped with fruit, drenched in syrup, and like, you know, the giant.
Yeah, and then they have like the Americanized version where they're like cookies and cream with Oreo and chocolate and gummy worms.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's for the people who have 5-year-old palates, you know, like the people who really, really like things sweet. But I think standard is like not too sweet. Like usually the shaved ice has been mixed in with condensed milk, and they do have like extra condensed milk in like a small
squeezy bottle,
like
right?
Shot glass, like if you want more, but it's already in there. So I usually don't put more in.
Which is why it was surprising that like this story was so much more focused on the coffee than the bingsu. Like, I gotta admit,
where I was going. I was just like, oh man, I love bingsu so much, and I hardly saw any bingsu in this book.
There
made
was like,
me a little sad.
There was like one like viral video that they were making about bingsu, but that was kind of it. That and the name of the store. So
this is nitpicking, but it's only because I love bingsu so much. I mean, this is another like side tangent, and then like we'll go back into the story. But when I went to Korea, like I specifically sought out very specific bingsu places that did not have second locations in LA, because I'm like, this is the only time I will be able to have their specialty bingsu. And one of the places that I went to has been in business for like 40 years, and they only serve traditional pingsu. So it's like in the brass bowl, and like the red bean paste that they make it in their cauldron every day. And the rice cakes that they put on the very top, like they also hand make that. And I was like, yeah, like one of the greatest pingsus I've had in my life. And it did not have like all the bells and whistles. It was just shaved ice, red bean paste, and then like mochi on top. So good.
Yeah. So that's why it's so surprising that the story was so coffee focused, right? Like this story, it would have made more sense if they called it like, you know, a latte for two or something like that, right? Like,
you know, okay. So like before I started reading this book and I knew that it was enemies to lovers and it was about like competing coffee chains or competing like stores, I immediately thought of Red Mango and Pinkberry because they're both Korean froyo companies and they would always pick locations like right across the street from each other. And I thought that was going to be like that, the level of competitiveness.
That would have been interesting because like, you know, Red Mango and Pinkberry, for those of you who aren't, who don't know about the corporate history, is like, I think Pinkberry is the American brand and Red Mango is the Korean brand. And Pinkberry opened first in America using Red Mango's setup, right? Business strategy. Similarly, there's also a chain, two chains of Korean fried chicken, Kyochan and Bonchan, that also have like similar like corporate.
Yeah, they're always in like similar locations. Yeah, yeah, it is a very Korean thing to do, which
there's something similar happening in China right now, where China has a new show called Chef of China, which is basically just culinary class wars plagiarized for a Chinese audience.
Now, there's a long history of plagiarized shows. But Korea is also guilty of it, too. They plagiarize shows from Japan and make it more high production.
Yeah.
So after River gets his job, which, you know, I was like, wow, easiest job interview ever. But I guess, you know, if the employer is that desperate and you have someone vouching for you and you have like a lifetime of coffee making experience, great. What did you think of River's origin dating story with Cece?
It's just to his character that like he just lets things happen and like doesn't do anything about it, right? Like the whole characterization of their relationship is just she's a type A person. She has the plan. She has the master plan for the two of them. And he just goes with it because he doesn't, it's that he doesn't stick up for himself, but also he doesn't think for himself, right? He doesn't take charge. And, you know, I'm learning that that is just type B. Like to me, as like someone who, again, is borderline type A, maybe type A minus, I've always thought of that type of personality to be like maybe type C, type D. I didn't realize it was just like, it's a B, right?
As someone who has had friends in bad long-term relationships, I wrote, this is why I tell people to not date men like him. And it's not type B. It's just type loser men. Okay. like guys who, you know, like they don't feel anything for their partner, but it's like, oh, like someone wants to be with me. I guess that's okay. And they just kind of go along with it, but they contribute nothing to developing the relationship or deepening it. And then like the woman is just stuck with this person who like doesn't do anything but is not willing to break up with you. I will give River props for breaking up with her, because so many relationships with guys like him just don't do anything.
True. I know a surprisingly significant amount of relationships where it's this type of dynamic, but for the woman, it's like sunk cost. It's like, I've been with this guy for like 10 years. We're going to get married because I can't be single again. Like, I can't, it has to have all been worth it. Right. And it's like, you know, if this doesn't work out, then what was the last 10 years for? And it becomes like this whole, like, kind of, I have to make it work because it's what I've staked my like identity slash reputation on. Right.
Yeah, I did feel for Cece in the beginning because I'm like, wow, what a shitty boyfriend. And later on, I was like, this is why you don't trust white girls. Like,
yeah.
It changed so fast.
She definitely goes on like a major villainous path. And like, it did feel abrupt. A switch was flipped at some point in the story where she's like, I'm going to be scorched earth and just burn this whole thing down. Whereas like, for like the first two thirds of the story, I was like, yeah, like this was not a good relationship. Good for both of you for getting out of it while you're young.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like later on, she's just like, I never really liked you. I like was in this relationship because, you know, your family had this big business and it was a great opportunity for like my college applications and also to have a secure job after graduation. And it's like, girl, it ain't it. I mean, if you're going to business school, there's plenty of Nepo babies there to date from.
Especially Wharton, like, you know, it's all Nepo babies, right?
All Nepo babies. But yeah, let's talk about River's social media strategy for for Pingsu for Two.
I will admit, I was surprised that this is like the second male lead we've read like this year that has a second life as like a book influencer, right? I guess does fandom count? Does it count as book influencing or?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a big part of fandom. I mean, like, go to San Diego Comic-Con. They have like a huge amount of authors there who are not comic book authors. They're like fantasy authors, and people show up for them.
Yeah.
I wrote, he's a fandom video essay YouTuber. God, why does he have to be my favorite type of YouTuber? It's like I probably in this universe would have watched his videos because I watched so many fandom video essays on YouTube. And it's like, damn.
I love that. Like, it was very specific, too. Like, he is a problematic anti-hero or problematic villain apologist fandom essayist.
I wonder what book, like, because in the book universe, it's like Son of Sin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what would be the equivalent of that here in real life? I don't know. Because it's supposed probably to be like a very cringy book series. And I'm like,
oh.
I was like, is this Court of Thorns and Roses? Is this SJM?
It's not giving, like, he's not giving fan of like steamy romanticy. I'm thinking more maybe like a Grishaverse type of thing or like some, like, you know.
I don't know. But yeah. I mean, that's his niche, and, you know, he has made fandom his, like, profession, I guess. Because he talks about how he, like, made multiple accounts and failed in order to, like, launch his YouTube channel.
And, like, you know, using rom-com world logic, this makes him the expert in making viral social media content, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not like the strategy sprung up out of nowhere. Like, he made a video of Sarang trying to teach him how to make a latte, and his coworkers were kind of going crazy, and he meant to put his video as like a close friends story, but it turns out it was just public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it went viral, and you know, it did, like, I think it's a good commentary on, like, parasocial relationships, the whole, like, virality of it. Like, you know, the cafe starts to gain traction because people start liking the characters of the cafe, right? And I feel like, so part of me was, like, a little squinty at the whole, like, social media virality being the sole reason why this cafe is, like, gaining popularity. Because, you know, again, as like a business major, like a person who studied it, like a business, like virality, viral fame, marketing fame gets you people in the door. But what makes a business succeed is retaining those customers, right? And that falls to like business fundamentals. And, you know, I really, the book kind of explores these themes, but like the whole point of like the one of the core, I guess, selling points of a coffee shop is this idea of like it being a third place, right? There's you know, Starbucks proliferated as like a third place for a lot of people, like a place that's not work and not home, but a place you can hang out. For a long time before they became super corporate, that was kind of their driving ethos for like opening their stores. And that's kind of how like coffee houses like are meant to, you know, operate, is as community third places, a place where you go to study, meet friends and things like that. And I do like that the story does kind of explore that theme, but more of like, this is a third place for River and his coworkers. We don't really see how this coffee house becomes that for like the customers, because we only really see the customers interacting with them through social media.
And as someone who has like worked with YouTubers, like as a PA and also like in their social media team, like I was just like, there's no way that this one video, which went viral, would kickstart their personality campaign. Like I, like it just seemed really, I was just like, I need to,
it's rom-com logic,
put like,
you gotta,
my
yeah.
inside baseball knowledge, like just throw it into the gutter.
It's rom-com logic, you just gotta go with it.
Yeah. But I did find it funny that like the reason why it went viral is like people were sharing it and saying, oh, let me talk about how shitty my customer service job is. And I'm like, oh, I could totally see that happening. Like a bunch of people using it as like a platform to talk about their shitty jobs.
That's true. But I feel like the
but
video
then how
that
do you
was
bring
shared...
that back to the cafe, you know?
Yeah.
Like
and I feel like the video that was shared was less about like, here are my shitty coworkers, more like, hey, check out our kooky gang of misfits at this coffee shop. Aren't we like fun? Whereas like if I was like a really like if I was to make a I hate my job, I would be like, you know, in my first office job, we had a coworker who would literally track our lunch breaks on a spreadsheet.
What?
Yeah.
What in the psycho? Wow.
And he would bring it to our boss during evaluations, and our boss would be like, why are you tracking Amber's lunch breaks? It's a very Dwight Schrute thing to do, right?
That's yeah. That's nuts. Why did Kai and the other baristas lie about Sarang and River dating? Totally unnecessary. And I feel like them being enemies marketing wise makes more sense for follows. You milk that ship by putting like, will they, won't they? Like just making
that's
them a
true.
Couple is not.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I feel like people are more invested in a ship. It's like the whole like, you know, after the main characters get together in a sitcom, the quality goes down because there's no more tension. Like that tension is what keeps people invested in the ship, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I just like, again, I don't understand why Kai lied. Like if it was just like a throwaway joke and then they're like, oh, just kidding. Like they're not actually dating. And then it's like, well, people are spreading the rumor anyway. Like I can kind of understand that, but they lied on local news television. Like it just seemed weird.
I mean, it did feel like every single character, granted they're 17, they're all pathological liars. Like they all lie
again. Yeah, it feels very 17, which, you know, I have issues with, because it's like they're given responsibilities that 17 year olds should not have, but they are acting like 17 year old shitheads, so the chaos is kind of warranted. But at the same time, I'm like, where are the adults?
Yeah. And that's especially like, so one of the other baristas at Being Super 2, Vanna, her storyline is that she is responsible. She's working like three jobs because she's trying to support her sister to prevent her from being taken into like child protective services, which I feel like as someone who knows people who works in like social services, if that is already a worry, that kid's gone already because you
yeah,
are 17.
You've already lost the game.
Yeah, yeah. You are not an adult.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It kind of seemed like the author wanted to put Vanna in like a Lilo and Stitch situation where.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the older sister is like working multiple jobs or whatever, but it's just like, I don't know. It just doesn't.
And maybe, did I miss, like, Vanna isn't in high school, right? Maybe she is older?
I don't know. I don't remember if her age was ever mentioned.
Right.
I mean, it should. Because if she's 18, then she can legally take custody over her sister.
Right.
And then legal services will be like, you're not taking care of your sister. Like, we're taking her away. So I just don't see how Right. She could be over 18.
I mean, I think she has to be. Otherwise, she'd also be a minor and also probably be taken into the system as well, right?
Because yeah,
you can't
that too,
emancipate
yeah.
yourself. But that also, there's the added, and again, like we're like squinting a lot because the logic doesn't make
it's
sense.
A, it's but a
like,
blurry image right now.
But like, if she's over 18, then her relationship with Lisbeth becomes a little bit more suspect too, right? Because then you have like
yeah.
statutory age gap issues. Maybe again, we're thinking way too hard about the setup here.
Yeah.
And also everything could be solved if they were all like early 20 somethings.
Yeah. The tutorial video of making Pingsu and then pretending to be all lovey dovey is I wrote hurting my face from grimacing. Yeah, and Dan, my husband, can like account for this because like the entire time I was like, like, I mean, the whole like performing a relationship on social media to get clicks is already like so ick, but then them blatantly doing this bad flirting was just like, I was like, this is so cringe. I don't know how anyone would follow them for this, but that's just me being old and
I guess
not liking PDA.
But also just the whole like okay, like we've already stated that this book is mainly a coming of age story for River, but it's also marketed as enemies to lovers. And so it needs us to be invested in this like main ship. And I feel like it's a very, again, it's very rom-com, very like maybe 2000s rom-com type of relationship where it's like, this is a relationship based almost entirely on banter, right? Like yeah. them sniping each other and not being honest with their feelings. I know I'm meant to feel chemistry between these two characters, but I don't know if I've ever truly bought into that chemistry. I never like, you know, like what did you think about like the chemistry between our two main leads?
I feel like they fit better as enemies, or even like they're bickering. I'm like, this seems more like a sibling type of bickery. I don't really feel romantic chemistry, on, like except for like when River mentions like in his inner monologue how pretty Sarang is, how she's like the prettiest girl he's ever met, and I'm like, okay, but would you treat someone who you thought to be the prettiest girl you ever met in this fashion? Also, like his confidence in terms of like flirting and like initiating
yeah.
skinship, I was like, I don't know, you're a loser boy. Like I don't see you being this suave.
So our book club Nina put, she's the one that coined the term squinting for our Discord. She has a list of things that made her squint, and one of them is a teenager who was unable to be honest about what he wants out of life being a charismatic flirty person with Sarang is definitely something that made her squint.
I did laugh when, because River is like into book fandom and fan fiction, and there was a page where he like, there was like an AO3 fake screenshot of like a fake AO3 fic titled Fraps and Fake Love, with the tag Sarang Cho is bad at feelings and no beta, we die like men. I'm like, wow, that's accurate. Like I'm like, every fandom has its cookie cutter my ship met at a coffee shop fan fiction. There's so many of them out there, and the whole like one character is bad at feelings is another like draw.
I feel like this is Susan Witherspoon showing like giving up her like her history as an AO3 either writer or lurker. I did really enjoy, like, one of the things that did make me laugh consistently were the chapter titles of every single chapter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did like the chapter titles. Yeah. I can see why some people would not like them, because it's like, it's too colloquial. It's too sweet. But then what is it, like Susan Lee's Romance Rivalry had chapter titles kind of like that. And
yeah.
I think it adds to the comedy of the whole book. Yeah, Cecilia's ultimatum for River to come back to Cafe Gong and do social media for them because it'd be perfect for my college app is deranged and manipulative.
Yeah,
that's a bullet point that I wrote. Yeah, the ultimatum was weird.
It's like when she went full villainous mode and you realize, okay, she is the antagonist. it really did feel like it came out of nowhere. Like, I granted that, you know, Kai did allude that she is like a girl boss gaslight type of person. But like, it did seem like they were able to amicably break things off at the middle of the book, right? Like,
yeah, it seemed weird because, okay, so like River broke up with Cece by saying, like, I'm in love with somebody else. Such a high school thing to do, by the way, because you don't want to just admit that there was nothing there.
Yeah. What a loser boy thing to do.
Yeah, sure. what a very loser boy thing to do. And then, like, him and Sarang are doing their, like, fake relationship on social media thing. And that's when Cecilia is like, oh, so you are in love with somebody else and you are working for a competitor. And it just kind of, like, all, like, snowballs into this villain moment, you know?
Yeah.
And also she's stressed because she's like the sole manager of this of their flagship cafe that's supposed to get franchising.
Which, like, I don't want to turn this into like what I wish a whole podcast of what I wish the story was, but like I feel like if you wanted to twist a knife on River to make him feel extra bad about all the things he did, she needs to take this manager job super seriously and become, like, you know, maybe fall sick to an ulcer or something. Like, he needs, like, the consequences of his leaving her out to dry shouldn't be her taking revenge. I feel like it might have worked better if, like, she became a consequence as well for him, right?
Yeah, I think so too. But it's like, so it was so shitty the way she was like, you're gonna come back to your old job or else I'm gonna tell your parents.
Which, another part I had to squint a lot, and then so did Nina, was how did his parents just not know? Like, where were they this entire time, right? Like, Nina wrote, River managed to hide this from his parents for the majority of the story. Like, again, rom-com CW logic. This is a world where parents almost don't exist, right? They only exist for plot reasons.
I mean, I can understand because like, the dad was preoccupied with, like, the getting like this store off the ground so he could get his franchise opportunity. So I'm guessing he's talking with investors all day. And then his mom seems to be doing like the books, like she's like doing the accounting. So that's why like they're not seeing him. But also I'm like, Korean parents are so nosy. They would be checking in on their kids at least like a few times a day.
This reminds me of the one chapter where he goes and hacks their phones.
Oh, dude, that was such a bad... Oh, my God. It's like hacking into my... It says, hacking into my ex-girlfriend's phone, but not in a toxic stalker way, I promise. I think that was like the chapter title.
That's the title, yeah.
And I was like, cancel him. Like, what the hell? Like, that is a love... That is a crime. Like, you could go to jail for that.
Yeah. This is like... It can't even can be considered, like, this is a type A response to a type B, like, problem, right? Like, it takes a lot of effort and planning to be able to pull off this, like, avoidant behavior.
Yeah.
But I guess that's why the parents never saw any of his posts, I guess.
I did find it pretty funny that he ended up on local news and then, like, the parents are like, oh, this is a Korean run cafe. I want to hear more about the story. And I'm just like, you're such an idiot. Like, why would you like put yourself in the spotlight like that? And he knows that he was an idiot for doing it. But because he is a disaster boy and doesn't think about consequences, or at least like, he thinks about it, but he's like, I'll think about it later, like when it actually affects me.
This
and
is
I'm
a
like,
problem
no,
for future
no, no,
River.
No, no, no.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it is a problem for current River too. But yeah, like he's given the ultimatum by Cece to quit his job at Bingsu for Two and come back to Cafe Kong to do the social media stuff that he did for Bingsu for Two. And he thinks that it's his last day. And then Sarang just kind of catches up on the vibes. And she's like, well, if you're going to be letting people down anyway, like, why not do what you want? Because it sounds like you don't want to work at Cafe Gong, and it sounds like you really like, you know, working for us. So what's the issue? And he's like, you know what, you're right. And I was like, that was such a fast switch, you know?
So we're coming up on like the climax of the story. At this point, they already kissed, right? Or have they not kissed yet?
With Sarang?
Sarang, yeah. They had that moment at the pier, I want to say.
I don't think they kiss until the blizzard.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they're definitely like attracted to each other. They're like giving into the attraction at this point. And then so there's a lot of different things happening at this point. Vanna is mad at Sarang and her family because they discussed not being able to trust her with a management position because she's working too many jobs. And so she gets poached by Cece at this point, who offers her way more money to work for them instead and to be... Oh, wait, this is also when Cece spearheads a cancel campaign towards Kai by like faking a text exchange, right, with a fan.
Let me just say, as a girl doing that, that's so gross.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Karen behavior, right? So
it's just like girls don't get believed when they're sexually harassed. And it's like, you're going to go lie on social media about sexual harassment and ruin one of your classmates. Like, I just feel like, I mean, it is such a 17-year-old thing to do. But like, as someone who is like in charge of the cafe, you would have to have more forethought. Like, this could bite you in the ass so fast.
And they're posting on the official Cafe Gong social media too, which is wild. Like, she starts making some very questionable, probably anger-driven or pettiness-driven decisions, right? She goes full Karen.
Full like, Gone Girl Amy decisions. Yeah.
And, you know, part of her offering Vanna a manager position that River gave up at Cafe Gong is she needs to make a statement that there's wage theft going on at Bingsu for Two. Which I think at this point, right, like, this is the point where River comes clean to his parents.
But like, before we get into that, I wrote Vanna working at Cafe Gong, no, the betrayal. But also, I don't care if your sister is going to foster care. Don't commit libel to the family that gave you a job and housed you. That is some psycho behavior. And yeah. I stand by that. Yeah. Like, everyone kind of forgived her because they're like, oh, it's your sister. I would have done the same thing. And I'm like, what? Do a crime? And also for a job that you're not 100% guaranteed?
I feel like if I were the Cho family, I don't know if I'd forgive her. I would understand where she's coming from, but I would also never give her any responsibility ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. The fact that she becomes a co-manager at the end of the book and the epilogue, I'm like, what? But Mr. Cho seems to make some really bad decisions, and I have issues with him as a parent. and the parentification of Hanul, who is the older sister, I love Hanul and Sarang's like sisterhood. Like, it was like so endearing and sweet to see. I think like it really made me hurt for Hanul, because like their mom had passed away and she couldn't go to art school, so she like pretty much gave up college to run this cafe because it's the only thing left of like her mom. And her dad is like, I'm not gonna give a manager position to anyone who is not part of the family. And I'm like, you're saying that when Sarang, your younger daughter, got into John Hopkins full ride, and she's willing to give that up to run this cafe so that her older sister can go finally work in the field that she wants to. Like, it just seems so selfish. It's something that like a Korean parent would never, never do.
I would have rather followed the Cho family story in this book than like the Langston Lee's. It's just so much more like Asian American intergenerational angst, right? Like, you have two sisters who are both self-sacrificing. Like, that scene where they're both like, no, I will give up my dream for you, like, it was probably one of the stronger scenes in the book, for sure.
Yeah, and then, like, River is like, I am gonna go ask for that manager position. I have the capabilities to do it. And then when Sarang finds out, afterward. She's like, you know, she's not grateful or anything. She's pissed. She says, like, who do you think you are to go over my head like that? That's like so condescending. And I'm like, yes, 100%.
It's just okay. So I still have a trouble wrapping my head around what River meant to do at that juncture. Like, what was his, like, what was his plan there?
His plan was to, like, he's like, I get the manager position, and then Sarang can go do, like, go to John Hopkins, Hanu can go to Illumination, and it'll be fine. The cafe will still be running. It'll be fine. And I'm just like,
such loser boy thinking, for sure. Yeah.
Like, but also, like, I'm like, Mr. Cho, you would make your daughters suffer and sacrifice like this just because you don't want to give, like, a non-family member a leadership job? Because I'm just like, what are you going to do when, like, because, like, Sarang was already going to go to school, right? So he was just expecting Hanu to stay there forever? Like, I don't know.
He probably thought she was already there anyway, so why? Like, I don't know. Like, he's very... would you call this, like, type B parenting? Like,
I mean, it's not... It's just him being like, this is my legacy. So, like, it has to be passed down from family to family. And I've definitely seen Asian families do that, but not to the extent of, like, I am going to rob my children of, like, free education at an elite college and, like, a job at one of the top animation companies in the world. Like, absolutely not.
Yeah. I feel like, in my experience, Asian parents in this situation was like, no, I will take on the burden so that you can go to, like, a better place for your future. Right.
I think it would have been more plausible if he said, well, I'm going to sell the cafe. Like,
true. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't want to give a manager position to anyone who's not family, but I also want my daughters to, like, follow their dreams because they've been, you know, nursing me as someone who has congenitive heart disease. And, you know, they lost their mom. So I'm going to give my everything to them. And then that's, like, an issue for the rest of the baristas, because they're like, oh, my God, I'm losing a job. And River being like, what am I going to do with my life now? Because
it'll be like that Save the Community Center moment of, like, a lot of of a movie. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a different book, though. Like I said, that's a different story.
So everything comes to a head. River needs to come clean to his parents to stop Cece from destroying Bingsu for two, and admits to all of his lies. Every single thing that he did for the last, like, 25 chapters.
I love how the chapter title for that is just like, oh yeah, this is why I lied. And it's like, yeah, there's a reason why we make bad decisions when it comes to our parents. Because, you know, when we think that they're gonna react a certain way, chances are they will react that way.
But also the fact that his lies have compounded with interest since the first chapter.
Oh yeah.
I mean, granted, his dad did overreact, but at the same time, like, and this is where, you know, like, you see the consequences, not only his actions, but what his actions have cost others, right? Because he's Cece in hiring Vanna and giving her signing bonus to commit libel against Bings for two has put the finances of that Cafe Gong branch in dire straits, right? That is kind of what Mr. Langston Lee is dealing with as he's being confessed to by River. And it's like, okay, so you're saying this whole situation where my business is now in jeopardy all stems from you and your bad decision making.
Yeah. But also, like, they didn't have to put everything into this one store. Like, yeah. I don't understand that either, because it's like they have other stores, you know? Like, I feel like they could have put more effort into those stores instead of a new store.
We're thinking too hard about it again.
Yeah. I wrote that River's dad needs therapy and anger management, because reacting like that, I mean, it's very in character for guys like him, you know, people who don't know how to cope with stress. Like their way to cope is to put on more work and to, like, work harder. And I'm like, no, that's not a solution.
But also, let's not kick your son out into a blizzard.
Blizzard?
Right.
Yeah. But River had every reason to think that his parents were going to flip out and be super disappointed in him and all that. And I'm just like, yeah, you were valid. Yeah. They reacted exactly the way you thought they would. And this is why you lied. And I can understand that.
But also, they reacted in a very for very valid reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, you know, good on you for admitting that this is all your fault. And that
but
you
it should have happened like months ago.
Yeah. So we get to the climax for the romantic relationship when somehow the entire staff gets stuck in Pink Super 2 during the blizzard. And, you know, we glanced over. There's a lot of other interpersonal stuff going on. Kai, and so the reason Kai works at Pink Super 2 is because his boyfriend slash now ex also works there, and they have their own thing going on, right?
Like, once Kai gets accused of being like a pervert on Instagram, I'm just like, everyone makes bad decisions, because River is like, we're not going to address this because the only thing that it's important on the internet is to be first. They're not going to believe us. And I'm like, yeah, but you still put out a fucking statement, you know? Like, the longer you wait, yeah, the weirder it gets. And then he wanted to, like, make it as casual as possible by, like, staging this Instagram live with Kai's ex. But, like, you know that he's a very emotional person and he's not going to act rationally. So I'm like, this was a bad idea. And then the ex kissing River to prove that he's over Kai to strangers on the internet. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, that happened. Next.
It gets very messy. And granted, it's you know, the chaos is part of the fun of this book, right? We squint a lot, but also, like, I think part of me in reading the book, like, for me personally, I was waiting for the moment where it all comes crashing down. River has to confront his bad decisions, right? Because that is, if that doesn't happen, then, like, what was the point of, like, reading this whole book, right? If he never comes to terms with it. And he does come to terms with it in, like, epic fashion, because, like, after he resolves, but after he, you know, confronts his parents, Cece has one last, like, F you moment, where she reveals the text chain or the email chain, where it's revealed that River was the one who selected this location for Cafe Gong specifically because the only competition was Pink Super 2 that he didn't think would last.
Yeah, he purposely said, oh, we're going to run them out of business. They will be bankrupt. And it's like, you wrote that and you still decided to work at this cafe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will say, like, the truth seance during the blizzard at the store, I was like, wow, what a high school moment. Like,
yeah, now we're back to, like, the world of young adult rom-com, right?
Yeah.
Like, Saturday morning special, like, this is where everyone comes clean and we move on as friends. The power of friendship will carry us to the new day. And it kind of does, right?
I mean, like, the final decision that they make is, like, we're going to make one last video and we're going to tell people the truth and then stop making videos because performing has been taking a strain on us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, great, but also maybe think about it a little bit more, because they immediately turned the live on as soon as the Wi-Fi came back on during the storm. And I'm like, no one takes a break. Like, even Sarang, who, like, just went on Instagram and was just like, by the way, River's never coming back to the store because he's a liar and he's not the person that you think he is. Okay, goodbye, folks. And then I'm just like, this is why.
But then
we
it
give
all,
people 24 hours.
But then it all works out, because the next morning the community does the equivalent of a slow clap moment where they all arrive for their morning coffee at Bing Super 2. Again, rom-com logic, everything works out. This is a world where our heroes get a happy ending. We did skip the part where River runs out into the blizzard with Sarang and share their like their kiss. And I feel like part of that is also like, again, I wasn't as invested in the romantic storyline of this book. I'm glad these two kids found each other. But like for me personally, I was reading to see if River ever experiences any character growth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Also, like when they kiss in the blizzard, I'm like, Sarang, you can do better. Like, you can do so much better. I understand that you have never had a relationship, and that's okay, because 17-year-old boys seem to like not be mature enough for you, for a good reason. And it's, yeah, the entire time I was like, this is not end game for you. Yeah. And then like, you know, like the slow clap moment there, you know, a bunch of customers, fans show up and they're like, are you sure like you're gonna stop making videos? Oh, it's so sad. I loved like watching you guys. But we'll still come back because we really like the coffee and Pingsu. And I'm like, you know, we didn't get enough of that part of the plot to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have bought that more if like more time was spent, like, because, OK, we get throughout the story, we get that Sarang really cares about making lattes the right way. Like Sarang and River are both really, they're not just enthusiasts, but they're connoisseurs of like the barista craft.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that I'm missing, that we are missing again, is like the third place storyline where like we need the more customers. We need like at least a relationship or two with customers who found community with Pingsu for Two, right? We're led to believe that the entirety of the community is built through the parasocial online relationship, which I don't know, I have a hard time buying as like someone.
Listen, if you're a part of, like, if you're going to be in a parasocial relationship, are you really going to go out of your way to see that person in person? I don't know. As someone who is in a lot of parasocial relationships with, like, K-pop idols and whatnot, I'm just like, I don't want to see them out in the real world. Are you kidding me? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, Mr. Cho at the end being like, River, you have grown. I will give you the manager position.
Right in front of his own parents who like own their own coffee chain. And I'm like, if I was River's dad at that moment, I would be angry all over again. Right. Like,
yeah. Excuse me, like, hell's no.
Yeah. Like, if you want to turn, like, go back to our roots in Cafe Gong, let's do that. Right. Like, I feel like things did resolve very cleanly with everyone. And granted, yeah. Like, you know, like parents, like he did kick him out into a very dangerous blizzard. So like I get that he's relieved that he's alive at least. But
okay, but like the slapdash apology and them being like, you know, we gave you the manager position not because we didn't believe in you, but it's because we love you and this cafe is our family legacy, and that's why, you know, we want to give everything to you. And I'm like, that's a BS answer.
Yeah, mom, like ma'am. Sir, I am 17 years old.
Yeah, you are. They're like, what do you mean you thought that we were disappointed in you? We've never said that. And he's like, well, you've shown it. Like, I can see it in your eyes. And I'm like, yeah, damn right. Like you can tell when your parents are disappointed in you and think that you're going to get nowhere in life, even yeah. without them saying it to you in front of your face. I wrote, apologies not. Like, apology not accepted. Like, at the end, I'm just like, no.
It's just like, very
your son
like...
could have legit died in a blizzard. I think it would have been really funny if like they like came with a whole like search party, you know, the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
like prove that you've been looking for him all night, you know?
I mean, as a new parent, too, I would also be concerned if my kids were out in the middle of a blizzard, and I would definitely have been out looking for them. Like,
yeah, screw the whole like, oh, you have to wait 48 hours for like,
yeah.
He's still a minor. Like, you can look after him like immediately, especially yeah. when it's a blizzard. There's chances of like them dying. you know, after like exposure to the element, it's just like, no, never forgiven.
Yeah, I mean, everything makes more sense. Not that it's good, but everything makes more sense if I view it in my mind theater as like a rom-com.
Yeah, like, rom-com.
As a, like, TV or Hallmark. Or
webtoon.
Like, yeah.
You know, things are over-exaggerated, you know.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it was the right format for this story.
Yeah.
Especially with like the vlogging parts, like when it would switch to script format, and I'm like, okay, I think that's a very clever way to differentiate like what's happening off camera and on camera. But again, I'm like, this would have been better if it was in visual form, you know, because then you can have the record red button in the corner and like the timestamp, and it's like clearly it's being filmed.
Yeah. I feel like it's the type of book that, like, I wonder what people who can't imagine scenes in their heads feel about it, right? Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and then we get a quick, you know, epilogue. Which, you know, it gives you what you want from a rom-com story, which is like a glimpse of life after the conflict. I did feel a little bad that Cece got kicked out of Wharton. I mean, she deserved it.
Like, what happened? Like, it was kind of like, did she get accepted early for a UPenn and then like it got revoked? Because it says she lost her scholarships too.
Someone snitched that she had fabricated that whole text exchange with Kai, was conducting like predatory business practices, and like, yeah, her acceptance was revoked. I can only imagine the only person petty enough to do that would be either Kai himself or Vanna, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't sure because she kept talking about like, oh, this will be great for my college applications. But then I'm like, did you get accepted and then it got revoked, or you just didn't get in at all? And all the scholarships that you had lined fell through. So I was a little bit confused on that.
But yeah, she ends up working at what I imagine is the Starbucks that took over the Cafe Gong space after they closed down that that location. We get a glimpse that like all of our couples have paired up. They're doing great. Vanna somehow is now a trusted member of the Bingsu for Two community.
I would never trust her. Once a backstabber, always a backstabber, you know.
River is still working as co-manager of Bingsu for Two, the competitor Korean coffee shop to his parents.
Well, it's a mom and pop shop. And Cafe Gong in that location had closed down. So really, it like isn't competition anymore. It like a chain versus like a family shop. I don't know.
But then also, if I was River's dad, that would be very awkward every day to say, how is work at the other coffee shop that's not owned by your family, right? Unless it's a long game where eventually they want to merge because, you know,
acquisition,
River and Sarong in this rom-com world, probably getting married, probably going to combine their family businesses.
I don't know how that relationship is going to survive, you know. Like, she's at John Hopkins, she's going to go to med school. Like, I mean, she's going for pre-med and then she's going to med school, and then there's residency. You don't even know if she's going to stay in Seattle. Like, it's not Grey's Anatomy, you know. Like, so I just don't see that relationship surviving, but it's okay. I'm in my mid-30s and I'm jaded, and you know, love is love. Let people be
optimistic
about their futures.
They'll survive because they're making cute bets about fandom t-shirts and such. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. My last criticism is, so there was Korean in the book, like actual Hangul. And, you know, it had footnotes saying like, oh, this is what the parents said and whatnot. The Korean seemed really awkward to me. Like, when I was reading it, I was like, it kind of feels like Google Translate, but like they slightly got the terms wrong, or it's like it's the right words, but it's not said in a way where it's believable. Like, it seems really formal. also. So I don't know. I was like thinking about my parents and how they would like say the words that River's mom and Mr. Cho were saying, and I'm mm-hmm. like, that's not how I would hear
I mean,
them say it.
I yeah, feel yeah, like weird. The answer to that question is probably the simplest, which is it probably was just a Google Translate job. Like,
yeah, it seemed yeah. very formal. It seemed very like not colloquial at all. So I wonder if there was someone who, like, I don't know what Soojin's Korean speaking level is like. I don't know if they had like a sensitivity reader who like knew Korean and, you know, helped with that. But like personally, I was just like, I don't know. Like it kind of sounded off. But also I yeah. have like a different relationship with my parents. So they would yeah. be talking informally to me, and they would be, I don't know. The vocabulary yeah. is a little bit different.
Just one more thing to squint at in this book is all I'll say on that. It's just, I think, you know, as we close our discussion of Bingsu for Two, it's, I will admit, I had fun reading it, but part of the fun was just being incredulous about everything that's happening. Like, part of, like, part being amazed at just such a loser trash person that I'm following as the main character, and part is like, this world is just wild. Like, where are the parents? Where are the adults?
Poor Hanul, being surrounded by these emotional, hormony teenagers. It was fun. It was an engaging read. I will say that. It did fit our prompt for summer reads, even though most of the book takes place in fall and winter.
Right. Where do you fall on that? Because that was another thing we were discussing in the Discord, which is like,
it's the vibes, okay? Yeah. Like, Pingsu is a summery treat too, so.
Yeah.
I don't know if it should have taken place during the school year. I feel like during summer would have made more sense.
Yeah, and I guess this goes back to, like, I don't know how high school kids do it these days. But summer was kind of key SAT taking time, right? Because it's, you're not worried about school. You have time to cram. And, like, you know, tests are happening like every month, right? I don't know if it's still that way. But, like, beginning of summer before senior year would have been, like, a very plausible start point. The only reason I can think of is you can't have a blizzard in August. And if you need your climactic,
I mean,
romantic
climate change, you know, it happens.
That's,
and it's Seattle.
I mean,
it makes sense.
That's stretching a little too far.
I don't know. Change the blizzard into like a flood.
Maybe. Yeah.
And then have everyone be stuck in like Sarang and Hanul's like apartment that's above the above the store. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a way to work around it.
Yeah. I will admit that this book did give the summer read vibes. It's very light, very like kind of, I won't say frothy, but very like fun read that takes place in not summertime.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun reading it. I mean, yeah. I criticize this book a lot, but I had fun reading it.
Yeah, which is what we want out of like a summer beach read type of situation. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
God, but River... Disaster boy, loser boy. I know way too many people like him, and I'm so glad that a lot of my girlfriends have dumped boys like River. Chances of them growing up without any like strong person to whip them into shape, very very slim. And I don't encourage women to become Barbara the Builder and like build a man that's worthy of you from scratch. Like, that's not worth it.
So what I'm hearing is you're giving a not good, a grim prognosis to the future of Sarang and River's relationship.
I just don't think Sarang's ambitions line up with the person that River is.
You know, I can see this becoming a situation where she has to give up her dream posting at a hospital to come back and run Bingsu for Two with River for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
That would be to character, right?
I mean, like, with her father and his poor health, like, I can see it, like, her father passes away.
Yeah.
And they have the cafe, and it's like, what are you going to do? And River thinking, like, well, like, I can still run it, and, you know, we'll be married. And she's like, I don't want to be married to you. There's someone else that I like at my residency program or something. Yeah, you know, like, I can write a fanfic of this book. I'm just saying, the possibilities are there.
Yeah. All right. And with that, that'll do it for our discussion of Ping Su for Two by Sujin Witherspoon. Thank you so much for listening. And if you have any thoughts about either the book or our discussion of it, please let us know either on Discord if you're one of our Patreon supporters or on our Goodreads forums. We always love to hear your feedback on our discussion episodes whenever possible. All right, so before we go, did want to leave you with our book club pick for August 2025. This month is my turn to pick a book, and I have chosen The Wangs Versus the World, which is the debut comedy novel by Jay Chang, published in 2016. This is a book that's been on my list ever since we started the podcast back in 2016. It is a cross-country road trip novel about a Taiwanese American family as they travel across the country after losing everything during the 2008 financial crisis. It's been, I think it's been pitched as like Crazy Rich Asians meets Little Miss Sunshine. And I
also think a little bit of Schitt's Creek.
A little bit, yeah, for sure. And I've been wanting to read this book for a while now. And we might be having Jade on later this year for her latest novel coming out. So I think it's a perfect time to like get a sense of her writing and to read a book that's been on my TBR list for, at this point, almost a decade. So yeah, looking forward to reading and discussing this book with you all. If you are one of our Patreon supporters, please don't forget to check out our Discord for our reading schedule for this book. And for the rest of you, you know, let us know your thoughts as you read along on Goodreads as well. But yeah, with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Ri Ryu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Asians in Baseball alongside Naomi Koh and Scott Okamoto. Asians in Baseball is exactly what it sounds like, a podcast about the Asian and Asian Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Americans in Major League Baseball. Every week, we break down the highlights of what's going on with Asians in baseball and then take a deeper dive into the Asian and Asian Americans past and present who have shaped baseball as it is today. Whether you're Kim Eng's number one fan or you've never even heard of Hideo Nomo, we've got something for everyone. Especially for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Maybe too much for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Listen to Asians in Baseball wherever you get podcasts, part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.